Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation with David Walker, Comptroller General of the United States and head of the Government Accountability Office. Also joining us in our conversation is Al Morales. Well, Dave, according to the GA report, Challenges of the 21st Century, that just came out recently, where are we headed now as a nation in terms of fiscal conditions?
Paul, it's not a pretty picture. Last year, we had an operating deficit of over $560 billion. We had a unified deficit of over $400 billion. Of that unified deficit, less than 25% had anything to do with Iraq, Afghanistan, and incremental homeland security cost. And yet, we had strong economic growth. But more importantly than where we were last year and where we are this year is where we're headed. We face large and growing structural deficits due primarily to known demographic trends, namely the retirement of my generation, the baby boom generation, and rising health care costs. And it's a serious problem. It's getting worse, and we need to start doing something about it.
Can you take us a little bit more through the problem of deficits? I mean, how does it affect sort of government programs and its impact on the American citizens?
Sooner or later, you have to be able to match your revenues with your expenses. And right now what's going on is we are mortgaging our children and grandchildren's future because we're not matching revenue with expenses. There is no free lunch, and ultimately the crunch will come. And that crunch will come in the form of significant increased budget pressures on existing government programs, significant additional pressures for higher taxes, which could have adverse economic growth consequences. And ultimately, we're talking about, our competitive posture and the quality of life of Americans in future years.
Before I ask you about your recommendations, I'd like to drill a little bit further and sort of what would it look like if the conditions continue? I mean, it's sort of unabated.
Well, we run several simulations, long-range budget simulations, several times a year at GAO. We've been doing that since the early 1990s. And depending upon whether you want to go with an optimistic or a pessimistic scenario, the bottom line is, even under the optimistic scenario, we face large and growing structural deficits that we're not going to grow our way out of. Under the pessimistic scenario, we could be doing nothing more than paying interest on federal debt by 2040, 2042. That's obviously not an acceptable outcome. I think the likely scenario is between the optimistic and pessimistic, but the bottom line is this. We face large and growing structural deficits that are too great to grow our way out of, and tough choices are going to be required.
In terms of those scenarios, maybe you can help me calibrate them. I mean, one expectation of the future is the quality of life increases. If we were to reach a point in the pessimistic scenario where we're just paying interest, would that mean sort of the quality of life would be equal to sort of a period of time in the past? Is that kind of what we're talking about?
Well, realistically, what we're talking about is you're not going to be in a scenario where all you're doing is paying interest on debt. If you don't end up restructuring the base of government, the likely outcome to that is tax levels that are 2.5 times as great as they are today. Well, think about, if your federal taxes went up, 2.5 times what they are today. By the way, that doesn't count state and local, which also face, challenges as well in the out years. And so that obviously would have a significant adverse effect on economic growth. It would have a significant adverse effect on, quality of life issues. And right now, the miracle of compounding is working against us. Debt on debt is not good, and time is working against us, and so it's important that we act soon.
All right, now let's go to the recommendations. What were some of the recommendations to turn the current situation around?
Well, in our report, we recommended the fact that we need to increase the amount of transparency with regard to where we are from a financial and fiscal standpoint. That means revising and enhancing current financial reporting. It also means revising and enhancing reporting dealing with the budgetary process. We've recommended a number of budget process reforms to reconsider pay-go rules on both the spending side as well as the tax side, to look at some type of spending caps, to look at some for triggers for mandatory spending. That were prompt needed action by the Congress, because now we've got a situation where over 60% of the budget is on autopilot and it's growing every year. And so there are a range of proposed possible reforms that we lay out in the report as a beginning.
David, in a keynote address, you mentioned that key indicators can help inform strategic planning, enhance performance and accountability reporting, and improve decision making. Can you describe to us what these key indicators may be and what ways the U.S. can adopt these key indicators at a national level?
Well, Al, it's amazing to me that the U.S. government that spends or will spend in fiscal 2005, 2006, about $2.5 trillion, does not have a set of key national indicators in order to be able to assess our nation's position and progress over time and relative to other countries. Other countries have this. Some states and localities have it. You know, we need a set of outcome-based indicators, a dashboard, a portfolio, if you will, of indicators that deal with economic, safety, security, environmental, social indicators in order to do just the three things that you said, you know, help inform strategic planning, help enhance performance and accountability reporting, and help to facilitate that baseline review that we're talking about in the 21st Century Challenges Report that needs to be undertaken.
You mentioned other countries. What other countries have these national indicators?
Well, some examples would be the United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand, as well as the European Union.
You mentioned in the 21st Century Challenge Report the need to engage in a baseline review of the entire federal government. Where must there be a review of the entire federal government?
Well, basically, what the report notes is that to a great extent, the current federal government is an accumulation of policy, programs, functions, and activities that have arisen over a number of years, and that, in fact, are based on conditions that existed in the United States and around the world in the 1950s and the 1960s, and that we have not engaged in a fundamental review and reexamination of discretionary spending, of entitlements and mandatory spending, and tax policies and preferences in decades. And that the assumption has been that the base of government is okay, and the great debate that occurs every year is, are you going to plus up something a little bit or cut something a little bit? But the fact of the matter is the base is not only not okay, it's not well aligned with 21st century realities, and it's not sustainable. So we need to engage in that fundamental review and reassessment. And in our report, we raise generic questions that should be asked about every major policy program, function, activity, and over 200 illustrative questions that need to be asked and answered. Hopefully it will stimulate discussion and debate on this very important issue.
How can policy makers examine and engage in the review of federal government?
Well, one of the things that we have in the report is there are a variety of ways this could be done. I mean, for example, that we clearly need more rigorous oversight. We clearly need to make sure that the reauthorization process is substantive. We clearly need to relook at, you know, which programs and policies are working and which ones aren't working as part of the annual appropriations process. And so those are just three examples. But we may also have to, in some circumstances, have additional studies conducted by GAO or others as input. Commissions may be necessary or appropriate in order to deal with particularly complex and controversial issues. So there are a variety of different means and vehicles that I think are going to have to be used. And candidly, I think we're talking about an effort that could take as long as a generation to effectively address all of the issues that are going to have to be addressed.
It's hard not to think about the big challenges facing our country without thinking about Social Security and health programs. What's your perspective on the status of these programs in the United States?
Well, both Social Security and our health programs are unsustainable in their present form. Social Security represents a large and growing problem. Healthcare is a much bigger problem. For example, Social Security has an estimated unfunded obligation of about $3.7 trillion in current dollar terms for the next 75-year period. That's how much money you'd have to have today invested at Treasury rates to close the gap between projected revenues and expenditures. Medicare alone has a gap of $27 to $28 trillion, so about eight times greater. And yet Medicare is only a subset of the much broader problem. Clearly, we're not going to be able to get back on a sustainable path and a prudent course unless you reform entitlement programs, and these are the two biggest entitlement programs.
You've talked about entitlement reform before and said that it's essential and that problems with Social Security are not that difficult to solve. Well, what do you mean by this?
Well, first, the imbalance in Social Security is much less than the imbalance in Medicare. Furthermore, what I have found over the years in my speaking and other interaction opportunities with the American people around the country, of all ages, I might add, is that people who are retired or nearing retirement are the ones most fearful of change. whereas young people are discounting Social Security and in many cases don't think they're going to get it at all. Therefore, that means you have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to restructure Social Security in a way that will leave current retirees and near-term retirees alone, that will make progressively greater changes to the program the younger the person is, and has an opportunity to be phased in over a number of years and exceed the expectations of every generation of Americans. In other words, everybody will get more than they think they're going to get. Not more than they've been promised, more than they think they're going to get. And after all, if you can exceed expectations, I call that a win. So, frankly, it's going to be a lot easier to do that for Social Security, and we need to get on with it because time is working against us. And if we can reform Social Security, that will end up improving our credibility with the markets and enhance confidence to be able to deal with much more difficult issues.
That's fascinating. You described quite a lot of challenges in just a short period of time. How is GAO changing and facing its own challenges? We'll ask David Walker of GAO to take us through this when the Business of Government Hour continues.